you pursuing a natural lifestyle for yourself and your family? Are you concerned about the standard American diet and options available for healthcare? Are you curious about herbs or health or already practice home herbalism? You've come to the right place. My mom, Naomi Kilbrick, is a Christian clinical herbalist and owner of Laurel Tree Wellness. She teaches simple ways to live in a more healthy way and to work with plants to promote and restore health. Welcome to the Family Herbalism Podcast.
Welcome back to the Family Herbalism Podcast and to Herba Remedium students. So today it is approximately 30 degrees outside, but the sun is shining and it feels like spring is just around the corner. And by the time this episode airs, it probably will be a few degrees warmer, maybe even approaching 50 degrees, but we'll see. Supposedly, spring is going to be coming early this year, and it certainly feels like it should because we have so many things to do this spring that are kind of waiting on the warm weather and the melting snow, but we'll see how it turns out. In the meantime, I'm thinking about wild harvesting and going for herb walks and doing all of the outdoor things and making my plans. And it's perfect time because I wanted to share with you today about wild harvesting for the purpose of first aid. So as a home herbalist, one of the first themes that really drew me to working with herbs was the fact that I could use these as resources to help me in healing my children when they injured themselves and otherwise supporting my family through these sudden, unexpected health concerns. And they were just, it was really nice to have them as a resource, right? But, you know, early on, we're thinking about how can we properly identify plants? How can we properly, choose dosages and methods of working with these plants and make sure that it's going to be a safe way to bring them into our families, you know, into our home, into our lives, and work with them with our children. And so right off the bat, wild harvesting isn't necessarily, maybe for some people who were raised in it, but it's not necessarily the first thing that draws our attention. But I really like working with wild harvested plants for a number of reasons, one of which is because no matter what happens and where we are, if I can identify a few plants, then I know that if something happens, I'll be able to work with those resources that I have until I'm able to get to a better location or get assistance from someone else who has more knowledge around this urgent care need. But still, as an herbalist, I think there is, in addition to the nostalgia that we have around growing a kitchen garden, we also have this image in our minds about being able to walk outside our back door and collect some herbs that are easily accessible and just growing there all the time, to be able to come in and make our little teas and make our poultices and help our family to heal. And, you know, I think that's such a beautiful image. And as our confidence grows in identifying plants and as we become more comfortable with working with each herb, you know, that it's in our environment, it gets easier and easier as time goes on. And we go from being, you know, looking out at this field and seeing a sea of green to being able to pick and choose and look at all these little individual plants and say, oh, that's this plant and that's this plant. And it becomes easier. So right off the bat, I will say, if this is something that interests you, don't feel like you have to learn it all at once. This is not something that you're going to be doing over, you know, a very short period of time. This is a new way of living. This is a new way of, approaching health from a holistic perspective. And so that takes time and it's a journey and that's okay. I've actually created a few podcasts around wild harvesting and around first aid concerns. And so if you scroll way back down the list of podcast episodes to the beginning of our show, then you'll find some of those. And I will link to them also in the notes for the Herba Remedium students that are here. So we're going to talk about we're going to jump right into some conversations around wild harvesting and plants that are useful for first aid purposes. But I would like to just emphasize the fact that this is a process and it is a journey, and you do need to have some basic understanding of how to identify plants safely, how to harvest them, when to harvest them, where to harvest them, before you really get started. So having a foundation in wild harvesting is important, and we're not going to be able to cover all of that in today's episode. So I just want to throw that out there. But I also remember, speaking of nostalgia, what that was like for me when I first started wild harvesting. I've been working with plants for 18 years now. And when I started off, I was working with plants that I had put in the ground. So I knew what they were. I had either gotten them from someone that I knew who was an herbalist, or I planted them from seeds, which came with the, you know, identifying information on the package. And so I knew what I was working with. Or I just went straight to an herb shop or a website and purchased plants that had already been grown and dried and, you know, processed. So it was something that was not necessarily stressful to me, but the idea of wild harvesting seemed scary at first. I was worried that maybe the plant that I'm growing isn't necessarily the same plant, maybe the same variety that is out there in the wild. But after several years of working with plants like that, in purchasing herbs ahead of time and growing them myself, I started really looking at the plants that I noticed growing in the wild, and I realized that they looked pretty similar, you know? And if they aren't the same thing, then why do they look so similar? So I started doing some more research, and one plant at a time, I started harvesting from the wild. And it was really cool being able to make that transition from even things like yarrow. And, you know, we grow yarrow and it comes in all these pretty colors if you're growing it for cultivated flowers and, you know, to put them on your table. But to be able to extend your eyes out to the field and look at all of these yarrow flowers that are already growing, it's just exciting to think that you can just go out there and harvest from these abundant plants that are already available without having to go through that, you know, cultivation process. So that's kind of where I started. It took several years for me to get to that point and feeling comfortable in doing that. But once I did, it just opened up this whole new world of possibilities, which was really exciting. So I still purchase herbs from other herbalists. I still grow them myself, but I also will intentionally wild harvest certain plants that are, you know, primarily for my family, where I don't need to harvest quite as much. If I was doing that for my clients, it might be a little bit different, but that's kind of where I'm at this point in time, of just having a combination of different sources for different plants. And I just really like being able to keep my, you know, foot in the door, so to speak, with the wild harvesting. And I do that pretty much every year. So again, there's a whole bunch of really important things that are, you know, that you need to know if you're going to be wild harvesting. But once you start down that path, you're going to learn that there's just so much possibility and so many opportunities to help your family heal, just by using what is already available to you in your environment. I also created a couple of episodes that may be useful later on in season 3, so not quite so far back, that are relevant to specific types of injuries, like head injuries. In particular, I have one on structural injuries, so if you're interested in looking at particular types of injuries, you may want to go back and listen to those. I also talk about herbs in those podcasts that are not specific to wild harvesting. So if you're interested in using spices or maybe more popular adaptogens and things that don't grow as easily in the wild in our area, then that might be more relevant to you. But today we're going to peruse through some of the plants that grow wild in my region of New England, which is in Maine. And so some of these plants that I'm going to talk about today are maybe not relevant to you in the sense that maybe you live in a completely different biome and you don't have any of these plants. And if that's the case, I hope that you still find this episode inspiring because it will maybe offer you some ideas on what you're looking for in certain plants. Perhaps the uses and the applications would be interesting, or the type of actions that I'm going to be talking about with each of these plants. So keep your ears open and listen out for key phrases and things that might be useful for you in your own search for plants in your region. But perhaps there may be a few in here, even if you're further south or further north than I am, perhaps there will be a few plants that you recognize. I also host herb walks around my property every year, and I have in the process discovered about 40 varieties of plants that I personally feel comfortable working with. Excuse me. It's funny, I actually discover new plants every year. And this past year, we had been disrupting the ground outside of where we're building our new clinic space. And so there was a lot of, you know, yard work happening, a lot of uprooting old bushes and things like that. And all of a sudden, these little plants started sprouting up that I had not seen before. And I looked at these plants more closely and I was like, wait a second, I think that's comfrey. And I had not seen it grow up in the wild before. I had only ever planted comfrey myself and then seen little bushes pop up, but not too far outside of my garden area. So I knew it came from my original starters, but this is on the clear other side of my property and there's no way it came from the original starters that I put in the ground. But it's just like popping up all over the place around the clinic. And it's so cool because comfrey was the very first plant that I worked with. And so it really feels like a little sign, a little blessing from God saying, you know, we're on the right track. And it's just a reminder of where we started and how things are moving into a new phase. And so that was really cool. But every year I discover new plants that are growing and kind of get to know, you know, what's possible in my area, in my little biome, my nick of the woods. And so I love doing these herb walks. It's a great way to get to know what's growing in your environment. And so before you even start harvesting, one of the first things that you should do is just start taking regular walks around your area. And so if it's not your land, if you have a very small plot of land, or if you're renting an apartment, perhaps it would be more effective for you to take a walk through the local parks or hiking trails. Just find out, you know, find a place where you would possibly be able to harvest, and, you know, just little bits here and there for your family, and take a look and see what's growing and get to know the plants and watch them through the seasons. Notice what they're growing next to. Notice the quality of the soil, how damp it is, how dark it is. Notice when the flowers bloom and what time of year it really seems to hit its peak. These are all pieces of information that will be helpful to you because you're kind of building your repertoire, and over, you know, over the seasons, you'll get to know these plants and then come to realize that regardless of what happens for, you know, these little emergencies, life's little emergencies, you'll know where and when to look for what supplies. So taking herb walks on a regular basis is a great idea. So I mentioned comfrey, and I'm not actually going to talk about comfrey today because even though it's one that does apparently grow wild on my land and one that I really do enjoy working with, it is one that I've talked about a lot in the past. So if you go way back to the very beginning of the podcast, the very first, actually I take that back. I think it was the second episode. I talked about your very first plant and comfrey because that was mine. And I speak about some of the benefits of working with that plant. So if you are curious about my very first plant, you can refer to that episode. So I'm going to share with you about 10 different plants and some of their basic actions in regards to first aid treatment specifically, and examples of when I would work with them. And then I'll share some examples of how you might work with these plants for the purpose of first aid. And I also will include photos too for Herba Remedium students. There will be photos of these plants in your notes for the class. However, I would encourage you to, regardless of whether you're a student or whether you're listening into the podcast, that you do look into what each of these plants appear like in different seasons before you wild harvest any of them. So you can use Google. There's plenty of plant apps. There's one that I use called PlantNet, which I highly recommend. So getting some different resources, different books and things like that, where you can compare notes and compare photos, is a really important step in that process of wild harvesting. All right, so the first plant that I want to share with you today, which grows on my property and which I use for first aid, is called yarrow. In Latin, this is Achillea millefolium. And in the spring, when it starts to grow, you see what looks like a little carrot top popping out of the ground, because the leaves of yarrow are very feather-like. They're very dainty around the edges. And then when it gets to be about a foot tall, it shoots out these little bunches of largely white, tiny flowers that all grow together. And even though it looks really delicate, the stalk is actually quite sturdy. It's a very strong plant. And it has a little bit of a bitter taste to it, which is a great asset in its first aid, in its first aid qualities, as well as other ways that it supports the body in healing. But one of its major impacts on the body is its influence on the blood, which is great for first aid treatment. It can help in a lot of different ways because of its association with first aid treatment. Back in colonial days, they used to actually hang bunches of it in their little houses because the superstition around it was that it would actually help to prevent accidents from happening in the first place. But regardless of the superstition, it does have a direct effect on the blood. It is hemostatic, meaning that it stops blood flow to areas that shouldn't be bleeding. It can also prevent congealing of blood to other locations. So things like hematomas and bruises, it will help to heal more quickly and help to, even in situations like, I wouldn't necessarily rely on it for a stroke, but if there was a blood clot that broke loose, it could help to prevent it from lodging in places that it shouldn't. So let's see here. It also can stop heavy bleeding and heal bruises, and really any wound that involves a lot of blood. So by some herbalists, it is called the great normalizer of the blood, because it's one of the first remedies that we think of when it comes to being able to either stop bleeding or encourage bleeding or more efficient movement of blood through the body. So you can use it for nosebleeds, for cuts and bruises, abscesses, hematomas, active hemorrhaging with bright red blood. And also, it should go without saying, but if you do find yourself in a situation with active hemorrhaging, it's really important that you call emergency services. Don't rely on the herbs, but while you're waiting for emergency services to show up with such a situation, that's when you work with your hemostatic herbs to help slow down the bleeding. So the next one is cinquefoil. Cinquefoil grows close to the ground. It's a little bit less noticeable than the yarrow, but it is in the rose family, which means that it's very safe to work with. And some varieties, even though it does tend to grow close to the ground, some varieties do have a stalk that will make it stand up to about a foot and a half tall. Most cinquefoil varieties grow through the help of rhizomes and vines close to the ground. But regardless of the variety, cinquefoils are largely interchangeable, which means that you can use whatever variety you have growing around your home for similar purposes. A mature compound leaf will have five jagged-edged leaves grouped together around the stem or the vine. And the funny thing is about cinquefoil is that these groups of leaves, these compound leaves, very closely resemble marijuana. So if you're not looking too closely or if you're not super familiar with what marijuana or cinquefoil look like, you're going to look at this leaf and say, man, that looks a lot like the pictures I've seen of marijuana. And it's kind of funny. I have stories about that too. The mistakes that can happen are very funny. But when it blooms, the flowers are yellow. They have 5 petals. It's like a soft, light yellow. They are very distinct from each other. Each petal is completely separated from the other petals. And the petals themselves look like rose petals. So that will be very similar, except for the color being yellow. All parts of the plant are edible and medicinal, including the rhizome, the root that spreads on the underneath the ground, and then the vine itself can be cooked down as well. It is a hemostatic like yarrow, but it's also strongly anti-inflammatory, which can help with all kinds of pain. And in fact, its most well-known species is known in Latin as Potentilla tormentilla, which means powerful pain. It can help to close up wounds and disinfect them inside and out, whether it's a canker sore or bleeding gums or food poisoning, diarrhea, bacterial infection, stomach pains. Cinquefoil can be of great help here. The next plant I'd like to share with you is plantain, which is also called Plantago major. That's the species that I have. And again, there are different species of plantain and they are largely interchangeable. This is not the banana-like fruit that we see at the grocery store, but rather it is the weed that tends to grow in abandoned parking lots and playgrounds, sides of the road, pathways, sidewalks, basically wherever there is dry, sandy soil that has been well-trodden. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why it got the name from Native Americans, white man's foot, back a long time ago in colonial days, because wherever the white man walked, plantain was sure to pop up. Plantain has large, distinct leaves that grow in a bunch around a central stalk. And the central stalk shoots up the center, and at the very top, you see a little cone of little brown seeds. And I remember when I was a kid popping those seeds off and making soups and things with them. So many of us remember growing up in New England playing with these little seed pods. But the leaves themselves actually offer quite a few benefits for first aid purposes. The seeds work as well. There's different parts of the plant that are useful, but the leaves are the most commonly used part. And they're actually pretty easy to identify also, not just because of the stalk with the brown seeds, but because if you look at the leaves, you'll notice that while most leaves on plants have a central vein going down the middle from which little veins branch off, plantain's veins all stem from the very beginning of the leaf where the stem ends. So they all kind of come together to the same point and spread out throughout the leaf. There is no central vein that everything else is connected to. Plantain is known as nature's band-aid because it works for so many first aid purposes. And in fact, if you chew it up and apply it to a wounded area, it will dry and stick to the skin. I have found that to be true. And it makes a really great band-aid. If you want your little poultice to stay on your skin, then chewing that up and applying it to your wound is actually quite effective. It is anti-inflammatory and soothing to the skin. It is vulnerary, which means that it is wound healing, it's antimicrobial, and it has a drawing action that pulls toxins out of wounds, which is great if there's a little bacterial infection going on, or you have a splinter, or you have a bug bite, in which case you want to be able to pull out the little bit of venom and toxins that are causing the irritation. Plus, it also helps to slow down bleeding, so it really just kind of covers all of the bases. Its same soothing action that it has on the skin, it also has on mucosal tissue inside the body. So I like to work with it internally as well. So it can help with the splinters. It can help with mosquito bites, soothing of rashes. Maybe you got some poison ivy. It can help with that. It can speed up healing of infections and also bleeding gums or canker sores. And also because it is a very safe plant and it's easy to identify, I like to use this one to share with kids as they're learning how to work with nature's remedies as well. The next plant is dandelion, which is Taraxacum officinale, and it almost needs no introduction. Most people are quite familiar with what a dandelion looks like because for a very long time, we have associated dandelion with those weeds that take up so much space in our lawns, and we use all these different weed killers to try to eliminate them. I've known some people to use like little root diggers to scoop them up out of their yard, and I cannot imagine spending so much time doing that, especially when there is so much value in these plants. There's so many things that you can do, right down to just eating them as a nutrient source. But all parts of the dandelion plant are helpful in different ways, and there are some useful benefits for first aid specifically. So these large, jagged-edged, narrow leaves do grow around a central stalk, which is hollow. And this hollow stalk also has a white latex sap. So when you snap off the dandelion head, you'll see the little beads of white fluid underneath. And the flower itself has a lot of narrow yellow petals, which look kind of like a lion's mane, hence the dandelion. And when it comes to first aid, the root can be particularly helpful for clearing out toxins. So if something has been eaten, something that should not have been eaten, then the dandelion can help to clear the liver a little bit more quickly, or support the stomach in digesting things that just need to move along a little bit faster. But also the flowers and the sap are particularly interesting when it comes to first aid because they're so full of antioxidants that are helpful in regenerating tissue, in healing tissue, and in soothing inflammation. And one of the most interesting applications that I have discovered in the past few years, thanks to another herbalist whose shirt I'm actually wearing right now, if you can see it, she discovered that dandelion sap was really supportive in clearing up brown tail moth rashes. And depending on where you live, this may be a severe problem in the summer. And just a light contact with one of these moths can result in severe rashes, even boils developing on the skin, swollen areas, very irritated skin, and very little can help. There are very few things that we've discovered that can help. And for some people who have severe reactions, they end up needing to use steroids. Well, there was one little girl that I worked with last year who had a severe reaction. Her eye was swollen shut. Her face, poor little face, was so irritated. And so I had her mother put some dandelion sap on her skin. And within 24 hours, there was a huge difference. And she very quickly healed after that. So I will recommend dandelion salve, as well as just the sap straight out of the flower head that can help clear up this kind of rash very quickly. It does have antihistamine properties as well. So if there is an allergic reaction, especially on the skin, it can also be used to help clear that up. And the leaves can help to clear swelling. If there is edema around an injury, then the leaves can help the body to flush out the excess fluid. And it's such a cooling plant that it really can help anywhere where there's inflammation, where there is heat associated, just like, you know, the surface of the skin is hot as well. All right, moving on. The next plant is mullein. Mullein is also called Verbascum thapsus, and it is well loved by mothers because the flowers are antibacterial and they can soothe an ear infection like very few things can. But this plant also has a lot of other benefits, as do most herbs. They can help in many ways. Mullein has a 2-year cycle, so when you're wild harvesting, you'll notice that on 1 year it has a very small plant growth, and then the next year it can be as tall as a tall man. And it will have these big, thick leaves that are covered in this fine, downy fur. And then it has this tall stalk with a cone-shaped top covered in little yellow flowers. So it's very pretty when it's full grown. And its look-alike is called lamb's ear, and the two are often mistaken for each other. And they can be used similarly for a lot of things. But lamb's ear is a completely different plant, and the primary way you can identify it is by its purple flowers. Mullein has yellow and lamb's ear has purple. So if you're not sure which it is, and usually it's mullein that grows wild, but if you're not sure which plant it is, you can wait until it starts flowering so that you can identify which species it is specifically. Now, mullein can be used for a number of different first aid purposes. Mullein is wound healing, it is vulnerary. It is astringent and anti-inflammatory, and it is emollient to the skin, which means that it softens and soothes the skin. But it also has an affinity for joint tissue, which means that it can be really helpful for sprains and strains, for strengthening recently set bones, to heal cuts and splinter sites, and it helps also to reduce pain and inflammation around the spine, as well as the feet. I think of places that have a lot of little bones. And so you have the spine that is made up of lots of small bones, and then you have the feet and hands that are made up of lots of even smaller bones, and mullein can be especially helpful there. But it can also discourage bacterial growth and reduce blood loss. Wild rose is my next favorite wild-crafted plant for first aid purposes. Now, all roses are useful for food and medicine except for cultivated varieties. And there are a lot of wild roses. We only have one that we officially call wild rose, but you have a lot of roses that do grow in the wild without cultivation. And the one that grows in my area most comfortably, most well, is Rosa acicularis, and that's the one that we call wild rose. It was originally brought to the United States from Asia to use as guardrails on the highways, and eventually it just went rogue, and now it grows everywhere, and half of my road is covered in wild rose. These huge, big bushes with their thick, thorny branches, and covered in tiny, dark leaves with little jagged edges, and then, of course, the characteristic little five-petaled flowers that grow later in the season. Now, it is a good thing that all of the parts of the rose plant are useful for medicine. You can even work with the bark and the roots. All parts of the rose are safe and useful for lots of different things. For wounds specifically, the flowers and leaves can slow blood loss. They are antiseptic, astringent, anti-inflammatory, and wound healing. They can be soothing to sunburns and to wounds that are hot and painful. They can soothe pain from muscle and bone injuries, and they help to heal bruises more quickly. And then you have the rose hips, which grow after the flowers have died and passed. They've fallen off the branches. And the rose hips are full of antioxidants and ascorbic acid, which, otherwise known as vitamin C, can be healing to mouth injuries and infections as well. Moving on to blackberry leaf. Blackberry bushes, known as Rubus fructicosus, are similar in shape and character to raspberries, but they are also, and also rose bushes, but they are smaller than rose bushes. So rather than these huge mounds of stalks coming up out of the ground, the stalks usually don't get more than a few feet tall. And they do have thick bark-covered stalks that grow up in small bunches, similar to the rose bushes. And of course, they produce the blackberries that we like to eat, although the ones in the wild do tend to grow smaller than the cultivated variety. They can be difficult to distinguish from raspberry bushes, although there are a few little tricks you can use, including looking at how the leaves are grouped at the end of each stalk. So whereas raspberry bush leaves tend to grow, or they always do grow, opposite to each other along the stalk, Near the end of each stalk for a blackberry bush, you will see four leaves that come together at one point, almost like an X marks the spot. So if you see that, then you know you have a blackberry bush. Now, both raspberry and blackberry bushes produce the edible fruit, but their leaves are also helpful in a lot of ways. Raspberry is well known for its impact on the reproductive system, whereas blackberry leaves are well known for their impact on the lower digestive tract, which can really come in handy if you maybe drink some water that wasn't so clean or you eat something that wasn't so great. And I'm thinking maybe not so much the adults, but the kids. Yes, we have stories, kids drinking and eating things they should not outside, and blackberry can help with the resulting diarrhea or stomach cramps that happen. It also, blackberry leaves can also help to close up wounds because of the astringency and the antibacterial properties. The astringency can also help with closing up mouth wounds. So even if a child has lost a tooth or they had to have some dental work done, then you can do a swish with blackberry leaf tea, and that will help to heal up the mucosal tissue a lot faster. And then even on a hot summer day, if you or one of your kids are overheated, a blackberry leaf tea, an iced tea, can be very refreshing and help to cool you down and re-energize you. My next chosen plant is wood sorrel, which is Oxalis acetosella, and this is one of my favorite wild plants to introduce to students on an herb walk because it has such a surprising flavor. It's really enjoyable. So it kind of looks like red clover, and it's often mistaken for it, but if you put the leaves next to each other, you'll see that there's actually a big difference. Oxalis has leaves that are grouped in threes, but each leaf looks like an upside down heart. So if you see the heart shape, you know that this is not clover. This is actually oxalis or wood sorrel. And the flavor, it does have, like, it's a little bit tangy. It's a sweet and tangy taste. And this is actually due to its high vitamin C content. It also has oxalic acid in it, hence the name oxalis, and that is also in spinach. So you can get kind of this bitter, astringent taste, which is similar to spinach, but the tangy part is the vitamin C. And it also has little flowers, five-petaled flowers. So this is different also than the red clover or other, you know, the white clover as well. All right, so we know it has vitamin C, we know it has oxalic acid. What do these characteristics provide for us in regard to first aid? Wood sorrel is antibacterial, it's astringent and wound healing. It also cools hot tissues, but its magic is in caring for skin and mouth wounds, pulling out infection, closing up the edges of cuts and canker sores, and even clearing boils and abscesses. Eating too much of it can give you an upset belly, and eating lots of it over a period of time can increase the risk of kidney stones for those who are sensitive to spinach for the same reason, but otherwise it's very safe. And most of the time when we're talking about first aid treatment, we're not working with a huge amount of plant anyway. My next plant is daisy. This is Bellis perennis. And, you know, I grew up thinking of this as just a pretty flower and not realizing that it has a lot of medicinal properties in disguise underneath all of its beauty, but it is true. Daisy has a lot of benefits. And in fact, if you look at the traditional names for daisy, it was known as woundwort and bruisewort. Wort means herb, and so it was the herb for wounds and bruises. And, you know, looking at some of its chemical properties and its actions, you can see why. It is anti-inflammatory. It slows down bleeding. It is vulnerary, so it heals wounds. One phrase that I learned for this plant was bruised, battered, beaten, and broken. All the bees. And it's so sad. Bruised, battered, beaten, and broken. But it is loaded with antioxidants that help to rebuild tissues. It can help with all different sorts of wounds, like bruises and burns and boils and itchy rashes and strained muscles and dry chapped hands, bleeding, and even specific wounds like falling on your tailbone. or having a stiff back after maybe a car accident, or recovering from surgery, prolonged pain from old injuries. Daisies do have a lot of lookalikes. Chamomile, feverfew, fleabane, these are a few examples. They all have those white petals with those feathery leaves. But some of them are medicinal and some of them we need to be a little bit more cautious about. So it is important to properly identify daisy. And once you have the specific daisy plant and you know that's what it is safe for almost everybody except for those who have an allergy to plants in the Aster family, the Asteraceae family. So use caution there if you have allergies. Otherwise, it's safe to work with. And then finally, we have self-heal, also known as heal-all. These are two common names, but its Latin name is Prunella vulgaris. And this one grows widely in lawns, especially in low areas that stay wet for a lot of the summer because it loves water. And usually lawns get mown pretty regularly, and so we don't see it grow very tall, but it can get pretty tall. And when it does, it's usually a couple feet or so tall. Last summer, I discovered a very tall plant for the first time on my property, and I was so excited. I actually found it during the middle of an herb walk, and so my students got to witness the excitement there in discovering that. Most of mine are, you know, I don't know if you can see my fingers, they're about like 2 or 3 inches tall. So the leaves on the self-heal plant do look like basil, which is interesting because the self-heal is in the mint family, just like basil is. And so it has a square stem and it has those thick, dark leaves that are pretty easy to identify. And then the flower cone on top is very interesting. This is a unique plant because it will grow a lot of little flowers, but they are all growing at different times. And so if you wait for it to look like it is fully developed and fully mature, then you're gonna be waiting until the plant dies because it's just not gonna happen. So you can harvest it anytime throughout the summer, whenever it begins to bloom. The flowers and leaves are both medicinal, and it has a lot of different uses as a first aid plant, hence the name self-heal or heal-all. It stops bleeding, it can stop or slow allergic reactions, it can clear toxins, reduce fevers, it is anti-inflammatory, astringent, and wound healing. And again, it's one of those that just covers pretty much all the bases. Self-heal can be used for bruises, ulcers, cuts and scrapes. It strengthens newly set bones. It strengthens joints that are prone to strains and sprains. It reduces swelling around injuries, reduces the inflammation in general, and cankers of the gums, heals sores on the skin, relieves bug bites, and it's also very safe for children. And a good one to teach them as well because it's pretty easy to identify. All of these plants that I've mentioned here today are generally safe for almost all people and are pretty easy to identify, with the exception of daisy, which does have a lot of lookalikes. So as part of the Herba Remedium course, students will get to learn how to make salves and infusions and poultices and lots of other ways to prepare herbs. And sprinkled throughout the Family Herbalism podcast, I've also included some instructions on how to prepare herbs in different ways. Poultices are one of my favorite ways to prepare herbs for injuries because they're quick to make. Essentially, you can either make a tea and you can pour the tea into a bowl and then dip washcloths into that and then apply those washcloths to the injured area. Or in urgent situations where you're out in the middle of the woods, a simple poultice can literally be chewing up the leaves and sticking it right onto the wound and letting the plant, you know, chemicals as they're released do their work. So those can be a couple of really simple ways. It works well for bug bites, works well for sunburns and for minor cuts and scrapes and things like that. For other herbs, you might want to prepare ice packs. And this is another easy way to prepare ahead of time some herbs for first aid use. So you wouldn't do this for injuries that need to be addressed immediately. For that purpose, you know, you might use an ice pack that you already have in the freezer or a bag of peas or whatever it is that you use. But ice packs are fun to make ahead of time if you anticipate maybe your kids are prone to accidents or they're small and you want to be prepared ahead of time. Simply pour the infusion that you've made with your first aid herbs onto maxi pads and freeze those on a cookie tray in your freezer, and then you can put them into a Ziploc bag and, you know, you can just stick them in the freezer for whenever they're needed. And hopefully they're not. But that works really well for anything that's swollen, where you really want those anti-inflammatory properties to be of benefit. Salves make a great all-purpose remedy because you can put in all kinds of different herbs with your beeswax and olive oil. They travel easily. They store for a long time. You can put extras in the freezer and pull them out as needed. I like to use our salves for everything from sunburns to bruises to little sites of infection that need to be addressed, all kinds of things. And then you have oil infusions, honey, vinegar infusions. Each of these have their own benefits depending on the need and the herbs that you're working with. And if you want to just do an herbal bath, you can throw in some fresh herbs into a pillowcase, tie it underneath the water spigot in your bathtub, and bathe those sore, achy muscles and joints that way. So if you would like to learn more about harvesting wild herbs in my area, I do recommend the book called Wild Plants of Maine. This is an excellent book written by Tom Seymour. I love it because you can tell that everything he puts in there is based on personal experience rather than just copying what other books have said. His pictures are great, just a lot of really useful tips and tricks. And I do have copies available for sale. So if you would like to purchase a copy, then you can shoot me an email at laureltreewellness@gmail.com. I also anticipate offering a virtual herb walk in 2024. So if this is later in the summer that you're watching this, you may be interested in checking out my website at laureltreewellnessllc.com to find out if this is yet available for you. And another book that you may be interested in once you've identified your plants and you're ready to make medicine is Richo Cech's book, Making Plant Medicine. You can find that on Amazon. It's pretty widely available. So I appreciate you being here today. I hope you found this inspiring and you're ready to get out there and enjoy the spring and start taking your herb walks and identifying your plants. I hope you enjoy yourself and I will see you here again next week.
The Family Herbalism Podcast is created for educational purposes only. You are responsible for any and all medical and health decisions you choose to make. If you experience a medical emergency, please contact appropriate medical providers. To receive herbalist support, please visit www.laureltreewellnessllc.com. If you enjoy this podcast and find it helpful, please share it with your friends and family. Thank you for listening.